Call Senate Resources Committee to order. Today is April 10th, 2014, and the time is 9 a.m. Let the record reflect that committee members present, Senator Coghill, Senator Wielichowski, and myself, Vice Chair Giesel. Senator Dyson will be along shortly after he finishes up in Senate Finance. I want to thank Chris Dickrell, who is our recording secretary today. Sam Greeley is taking care of the audio, and Joshua Banks is staffing the committee. So thank you very much for keeping us on track. We have a bill and a resolution today. HB 75, contribution from PFD, will be the first item, and then HGR 22, religious persecution and peace in Syria. So I welcome Representative Seaton to the table. He's going to present to us House Bill 75, his piece of legislation. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Giesel and committee. Appreciate the opportunity to present the bill. HB 75 looks to make changes to the click, click, give program that I'm sure you're all familiar with. I would like to report that this year has a total of over accumulated over $10 million mark has been hit. This year, $2.7 million and 40,000 individuals, the most in both categories ever, and that was to 512 organizations. This bill came about because of contacts from the Seward Senior Citizen Center and Ketchikan Area Arts Council. Because there's a provision in the current statute that says that if you have an annual budget of over $250,000, you have to have a certified public audit. And that costs between $7,000 and $12,000 to get a CPA audit done. And so what has happened is people were not receiving as much as their audit cost them, and which didn't make much sense. But then, like Ketchikan, they did not participate, and they were getting a lot of calls and from contributors that thought that they had lost their nonprofit status because they weren't on the list. And the the way the federal government works is if you have over $500,000 of a federal grant, then you have to do a certified public audit. So what this bill does is say if you're required to do a federal audit, you must provide that to the state with your application. But other than that, you don't have to do an audit. Now, what has happened in the meantime between the time the program started, the nonprofit status under the IRS is now a 12-page 990. So it's a very in-depth certification of a lot of technical details of your organization. So that has been beefed up so much that that provides ample basis for anyone to go online and find if they're worried about the finances or the administration of a program. So that's where the big cleanup was in this, is trying to make this available to more nonprofits and to make sure that the CPA audit is at the appropriate level. The other things that have changed in the bill is that the university, and they're here as well, is required to have the three main campuses in the listed so that people can contribute to those. And there was a glitch in the first that they didn't have to pay the application administrative fee, and the university has testified that they're fine paying the fee. The other thing this does is it allows the other campuses of the university, if they want to also put their names in and pay the fee, then they can individually be there. So that's an individual local campus. And the other thing that has come about is that Rasmussen Corporation, when PicClickGive started, said that they would finance the operations and the outreach and all of the basic administration for 3 years so that there was no state money needed to run the program. And they've done that for 6 years. But it's time for them to kind of spin out of that. But they did a survey this last year looking at all the nonprofits saying, how can we make this sustainable? And most of the people, first of all, most people said, yes, we want a sustainability and that the outreach program is very beneficial. And the majority of those agreed that a contribution from a percentage of what was donated was the most fair and equitable way to do that. And so what's incorporated in this is a 7% administrative coordination fee. Will pay for all the advertising and all that kind of stuff, as well as fulfilling all the administrative needs of the bill to make it sustainable without requiring a state contribution. So, Madam Chair, those are the main focuses of this bill: to make it wider available to more nonprofits, to make sure that the university campuses can individually be in there, and to just make the program better and sustainable without a direct contribution from state dollars.
Very good. Questions for the bill sponsor, for Representative Seaton? Yes, Senator Coghill.
Thank you. Just going to the section 2 at the end on page 3, the language, I just need to, I want to understand it as clearly as I can. So, first of all, would you explain to me the reference to the 26 U.S. Code 501? Those are the requirements for the nonprofits. At that point, is that where we're going to pick up the federal requirements for audits under the 501c3 and 4 or 6?
I can't tell you the exact code, but the federal government does require the if you have over $500,000 in federal grants, you are then required to do a certified audit. And this requirement says if you are required to do that audit, you must submit it with your application.
So I'm just guessing that if they're tax exempt under this, that puts the qualification level. Is that that's why I was wondering, and maybe the department can answer that. Then under the section 8 that has been modified, the requirement by the federal government to complete a financial audit by an independent certified public accountant. I know that at one point we had the limit, so explain to me how that language changes that limitation. Is it based on federal requirements for auditing then?
Through the chair, Representative Colgo. Yes, what it is our current requirements was if you had a total budget of over $250,000, then you had to do a CPA audit. The requirement under the federal IRS is that if you have a federal grant or administer over $500,000 of federal money, then you have to do an audit. So we've taken away the audit requirement for the state because we're letting the IRS Form 990 fulfill that requirement so that people can get that. And again, we're not through this program trying to audit individual programs. We're trying to make available so that individuals can donate easily and cheaply to the nonprofits of their choice when they're within their community or within the state.
And I, Madam Chair, I understand that. And what I'm trying to do is make sure I understand how that language makes that work. And it looks to me like if a nonprofit, and that would be probably described under the sub 9, the requirement of the federal government then has its limits. We're not going to require anything other than just a CPA audit. Are those the differences?
Through the chair, Representative Coghill, right. If they're not required to do a federal audit, then the 990 in sub 8 fulfills the requirement. The 12-page IRS form, which is available to the public to see and peruse.
I'm sorry. I should have gone back to see. I saw that we were deleting the 990 in that language, but it was actually there in the early part. I'm sorry. I missed that. My apologies.
Great. Any other questions for Representative Seaton? Senator Wielichowski.
Do we know how many new organizations this would open the PICCLIC give up to? Do we have any sense?
Through the chair, Senator Wielichowski, I don't have that number. Mr. Jordan from Rasmussen is here, and 4-Acre, and we have Candace online as well as the department. So I don't have those numbers with me. I just know that you've got a whole packet of of support letters, and many of those are from communities that had organizations that weren't able to participate, or just it financially it didn't make sense because it was too costly to try and go out and qualify to recruit contributions.
Yes, follow-up.
And I'm just wondering if the original intent when we proposed this bill was there are probably tens, if not hundreds of thousands of nonprofits out there, and you sort of want to sift the wheat from the chaff and make sure you're getting the reputable ones. And by eliminating this section, are we sort of opening the doors to allowing some nonprofits to be eligible for this that we may not necessarily want to be eligible for this?
And through the chair, thank you for the question. I guess the beef up in the 990 form is what gives us some security that someone is having to fill out 10 pages of IRS forms and sign their name on that, certifying that. Many of those use a CPA to fill out that for them. Some of the smaller ones don't. But that information is available. And so still what we have is a situation where there's a listing of the organizations. Somebody has to go and pick, click, and give to that organization on a voluntary basis. We're not taxing anyone. We're just giving the opportunity for them to easily do that rather than have an expensive solicitation campaign through the local communities. That's, I think, why the 7% coordination fee was very acceptable to most organizations, because when you're doing a recruitment, it's very difficult to get anything in the close to 7% cost to actually get resources donated to your nonprofit. I mean, whether you go on radio ads or TV ads, all of a sudden it can eat up large portions of your donation schedule. So that's what that is. Still, the individual Alaskan that wants to donate to an Alaskan nonprofit has that ability outside of PicClick Give, and this just gives a cleaner, easier way for them to make those donations if they wish to, but there's no requirement.
Yes, follow up.
Yeah, and I agree. I mean, I look through this list of organizations. There's some very some excellent organizations here that should be on the PicClick Give. What I've found in every year, there's more organizations that are on there, and at some point it becomes overwhelming for people, and I don't know the answer to this. If we get to the point where we have thousands of organizations that are listed, Alaskans will get fatigued, so I just want to raise that. Maybe we can hear from PicClick Give, the people who are administering it, but I want to make sure we have reputable organizations there, and I want to make sure the Alaskans have an opportunity to not become overwhelmed by the number that are there. And I don't know the answer to that, and I guess we'll have that discussion in a few minutes.
And through Chair, Senator Lilikowski, the only thing I'd say is there is a $250 application fee, so somebody can't just throw their name out there and not cost them anything. So if it is a 501(c) that has a 990, you know, has gone through all that process, certified to the federal government, gotten that, they still have to make the decision, are they so small and so localized that they're better off going down their street knocking on their neighbor's door? There's nothing that requires nonprofits to do this, but other than that, I don't have the answer. Maybe the people that are here, and they're available. I mean, I don't know. You have the list of those, I believe. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Seaton, the $250 fee is annual. Am I correct?
Madam Chair, that's correct. That's the application fee, and the department is here, and they can answer any fiscal questions on that.
Great. Thank you. Any further questions for Representative Seaton? Great. Thank you. I see that Dan DiBartolo, I'm sorry about that, is here, Department of Revenue, PFD Director. So if he could come up, I think we had some questions here that perhaps you could address. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Dan DiBartolo. I am the director for the Permanent Fund Dividend Division.
Great. You've heard some of the questions that we've asked. Can you offer some answers for us?
As far as Senator Wilkowski's most recent question, it would be speculation on my part to say how many new organizations may come back into the fold with the removal of the audit requirement. I can tell you anecdotally, I've had organizations, even here in Juneau, that I contribute to, and one statewide, that have told me, "Well, we're just not going to sign up." So that number to me may be dozens, but there could be ones that we know nothing about. The ones that have gone through the process, gone to the website, read the rules, and said, "Look at this audit requirement. We're simply just not going to apply," and we don't know about those people. So I believe there certainly will be an impact. This year we had 512 qualified organizations, and as the program grows, I certainly believe those numbers will grow. Will it get into the thousands? I can't speak to that. What I can speak to is, Senator Wilkowski, is the idea that it may be overwhelming. All I can do on a department side is improve the search tools that we have. And so when we speak the $250 fee that's paid up front, those fees go towards my programmer's time that's used for improving those tools. And every year we take suggestions from the public, from Rasmussen, the Alaska Community Foundation, and we look to improve the search tools, which we're going to do more this year. So those fees offset that and also offset our direct administrative costs. We contract with United Way, currently at a cost of about $40,000 a year, and they're the ones who actually look at those applications, vet them, make sure those 503Cs are above board. They're the ones responsible for that. So in the future, this 7% we're speaking of, as was spoken about here just a few minutes ago, it will not be managed by us as much as it will be contracted out, so they can handle that outreach, they can handle that advertising, and some of those things that are so important to these organizations, that have told us that the overhead for them to do that themselves could be 10%, could be 20%. And so 7% was certainly seen as a reasonable amount.
Very good. Further questions? Yes, Senator Wilkowski.
Do you know how many organizations have been turned away? Do you have any sense?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not know how many have been turned away. I can get you that number and report it today.
Yeah. And then okay, further question. Question. I had a one of my elementary schools in my district, they have a parents' guild, and they were interested in going on here and doing it. And for some reason, there were some big hitches. And this was probably one of them, quite frankly, that we're fixing today. But would there be anything else that would prohibit, like a local PTA or parent group from joining Pick, Click, Give?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not see any hurdles, especially looking at this CS in front of us, that would prevent a small organization beyond the $250 fee. As long as they meet the 503C requirements, as long as they're able to apply on time, which is during the same window as the PFD application period, January through March, if that is fiscally reasonable for them, that application fee, that I think most organizations would have no problem getting in.
Great. Further questions? Senator Coghill.
Thank you. And this goes to the 7% question. So if I go in the list and I pick an organization, I want to give them $100 for my dividend. At this point, it looks to me like what they're getting is $93.
Through the chair, Senator Coghill, beginning in, if this does pass both houses and, in 2015, we will have to change notification language at the Pick, Click, Give site, the process after the application that lets people know 7% of your donation may be appropriated for the actual coordination fees for the program. So this year we didn't make that notification, so we couldn't do it. But at the point of the actual distribution of the PFD beginning October, we would take the 7% of all pledges that did pay, and we put them aside in a separate account. That would be reported to the legislature in January when they convene, and that would go through the normal appropriation process, at which point at the beginning of the following fiscal year, those 7% fees would indeed be available. And so it would be $93 of a $100 contribution.
Okay. I wanted to be real clear, and so for anybody listening in, that's what the deal is, and I don't know that it's a bad policy call. It's just what the policy call is. Thank you.
Good. Follow-up, Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah. So since the inception of this program, we haven't collected anything at all?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we have collected the $250 fees for what it takes PFD to do the programming side and what it takes whoever we contract with to do the actual administration of the applications, which I am unable to have my staff do in-house because I just simply don't have the resources, and it would cost us more.
So do we I think there was $40 million. Is that the amount that was contributed? Or what was the amount that was contributed under PICLIC GIF last year or this year, the latest figures?
This year, pledges for the 2014 dividend application period was $2.75 million is what it was, and the actual contribution since program inception, and I don't have the exact dollar amount, but I believe it was spoken to earlier here, was about $10 million.
Follow up?
What is the cost to the department to administer this program? So if it's 2.75, you pull 7% off of that, that's $150,000 or so. What's the cost to the department to administer the program?
And through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, the cost to us, because we are collecting those $250 fees, is nothing has ever come out of the dividend fund itself. Mm-hmm. But I will tell you, in $250 fees this last period, with 512 organizations, that was $128,000, of which in the last fiscal year I was authorized to only use $71,000. The remainder of which rolls over into the following year and is available in case we do have other projects where they want to expand the programming, they want to do more, where we end up having to use that money for a larger project to make sure that this program keeps going on the PFD side. The 7% we're speaking of now would simply go into account, would be appropriated, and that would be managed by another statewide nonprofit like United Way or the Alaska Community Foundation, but we would never touch that money as far as directly being involved with the advertising, directly being involved in the outreach, again, because I don't have the staff in the department to do that. They can do it on a much more cost-efficient basis.
Just one more follow-up, Madam Chair. Yes. So I see it goes into a separate account, but, I mean, ultimately it goes into the general fund. And is that... I'm just trying to figure out why we need to take 7% of charitable contributions and where that money's going to go. Maybe you said it and I just wasn't clued in, but what?
To the chair, Senator Wilkowski, my understanding is this money does not go to the general fund, and if I'm mistaken, I apologize for that, but it would simply be an account where the money can be appropriated and has the ability to roll over, so it is not reabsorbed into the general fund each year. There was a concern that people would pay their fees, and this happened several years ago, where we were not able to use the money for the administrative costs of the program, and those fees were at one point absorbed back into the general fund, not used for the purposes that an individual would hope that they would be used for when giving that money, or excuse me, organization would hope when they gave that money. That was changed, and I believe that was in 2010, to make sure that those funds could roll over, that they continue to be available for the administrative costs of the program.
But is this something that you asked for, that the department asked for 7% to be withheld?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, we did not ask for that. It was because of Rasmussen doing what they had done for, they said initially 3 years, and then it turned out being six. They said it wasn't sustainable for them. And they said we need this program because it is successful to sustain itself. And these conversations started probably a year or so ago. And I will tell you from the department standpoint, we do think it's a good idea, and we support it.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Coghill.
And maybe I could, because I was asking, thinking along the same lines, was the Rasmussen work then quantified and shown that it would be at this 7% level? Is that how we arrived at it? And maybe the sponsor of the bill can help us understand that, but the sustainability obviously is something that the Rasmussen Foundation probably came up with, and then there might be some rationale there, but I would like to know that. So, and maybe the sponsor, Mr. Chairman, could do that.
Thank you. For the record, Chairman Dyson has arrived. Apologize for being late. I was spending some marvelous moments in House Finance.
Please. Through the Chair, Senator Coghill, I know that Mr. Marshall from the Rasmussen Foundation is here with us, and they did quite a bit of research and study and outreach to the individual organizations about what they could do to make this sustainable, and I would believe that he'd have some great answers to your questions.
And that might be a good one to have.
Yeah.
And then just slightly different topic, but I remember this filling out my PFD form and going through the list, and it just seemed very awkward. It was page after page after page of nonprofits, which is good. I mean, people are participating, but it just seemed sort of cumbersome, and maybe your programmers can go back and just fix it to make it a little bit easier for people to get through, maybe scroll through it on one single page or something. Maybe it was just that I was doing it on my iPad. I don't know, but just a suggestion for the department.
Mr. Chair, Senator Wilkowski, I would like to tell everyone here that with the proliferation of mobile devices and tablets, we are finding that we do need to work on our interface so it works better on those. And so we are putting more time and effort that not only the Pick, Click, Give program for our general online application this year.
Thank you. Other questions? That the end of your testimony, sir?
Yes, Chairman. Thank you.
Thank you. Where are we? All right. I have Jordan Marshall, the Rasmussen Foundation. Good to see you again. Thanks for helping us.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Jordan Marshall. I'm staff at Rasmussen Foundation in Anchorage. Thank you for your interest in making the Permanent Fund Dividend Charitable Contributions Program, also known as Pick, Click, Give, a stronger and more sustainable program. I've heard a number of questions here that I'd be happy to address, but it sounds as if the focus now is primarily on the question of the sustainability statewide coordination fee, so if I could jump straight there. Thank you. The cost of the program, as has been discussed here, includes the basic administration of the program at the state. But for the last 6 years, Rasmussen Foundation and its funding partners have covered the cost of statewide coordination and outreach in the form of personnel and also in the form of assistance to the organizations themselves, but also the outreach and advertising and marketing of the campaign. And as was also noted, recently we polled through our partners at the Foraker Group and the Alaska Community Foundation, we polled the participating organizations, and 86% of them said, we absolutely believe that the statewide coordination and outreach is fundamental to the success of the program. So the follow-up then is how best to cover the cost of that into the future so that private and philanthropic funds are not the sole contributors to that effort. And the participating organizations agreed that the most equitable and fair way to cover the cost of that basic statewide outreach and the work of a person to do that work, that they'd be happy to carry the cost of that through implementation of a fee. The number itself was reached by figuring out essentially what was the annual cost of the statewide effort, and applying the 7% fee would get us, once the program raised $5 million a year, which is a goal that we have as the program has grown over the years. Right, this year was 2.7. The first year was only $500,000. The second was a full million. It's been growing steadily over time. And we've targeted a goal of $5 million annually. And should that we reach that $5 million point, a 7% fee would raise roughly $350,000, which is enough to cover the very basic elements of a person that does the statewide coordination and some of the efforts that the program does to talk on behalf of the entire participating organizations about the benefits of making charitable contributions to the causes you care about. If I could, the statewide coordinator, currently based at the Alaska Community Foundation, oversees training and outreach for participating nonprofits and coordinates the broad-based statewide education campaign on behalf of the program participants. This coordinator provides expertise and serves as a primary point of contact for the program's 500-plus organizations. So that's exactly where this coordination fee would go, and that's what it would be used for.
Questions? Senator Wilkowski.
Yeah, I'm good to see you, Jordan. Thank you for all you guys are doing. It's a great program. I'm just trying to figure out how much money we need. If we've got 500 organizations now, we're at, my rough math, $250 a piece is, what, $125,000 or so. If you've got $2.5 million. And so what is the cost of the program? How much does the program need to sustain itself? Because what I don't want to see is pulling off 7% of charitable contributions and then having that money just go in the general fund for the state to spend on other things. And so can you do some rough math for me there?
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair. Currently, that $250 filing fee covers the cost of basic administration at the state. There's recently there's been a little bit more that's been rolled over to help enhance the online application itself at the Permanent Fund Dividend Division, so that we can make it easier to search and less cumbersome for the user, which is fabulous. The 7% would at this date not come close to covering the cost of the statewide coordinator and the outreach that the philanthropic and private funds have thus far covered the cost of. Our partners in funding may well continue to support the statewide coordination and outreach and marketing. We're considering it at the foundation as well. We believe in this program. We believe in encouraging individual philanthropy in the state to help make it stronger and to support the charitable organizations in the state. But at this point, a 7% fee applied to 2.77 would not raise the amount that we currently spend on outreach. So I, at this moment, don't have a concern that we'll be collecting more than is needed. It's my understanding that the fee, when it's collected, it would happen at the tail end of a dividend cycle. It would be withheld at the point of distribution of the donated funds to the nonprofits themselves. It would be held for another 9 months, essentially, in a separate account until it could be appropriated in the next fiscal year, and then made available immediately for use for statewide coordination in the next calendar year.
And then, if I could, Mr. Chair, different topic, going back to some of the questions we had before, do you have any sense of how many organizations are being held back? I see a number of support letters. They all look like great organizations. We've got 500-plus organizations now. Do you have any sense of how many more we would get, how many are being sort of held back by this? And then if you could just address the other point, which is how do we ensure that by removing this, some non-reputable nonprofits make their way in onto the Pick, Click, Give program? And also just the fact that at some point, people become fatigued. I mean, if you had 5,000 organizations listed there, people are not going to go through all 5,000 organizations. And if your organization happens to start with a letter at the end of the alphabet, you're probably not going to get there. So, I mean, you can just talk a little bit about some of those things.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, several questions. The first is, my best guess is a couple dozen. That was a number that was put forward a little bit earlier. We know anecdotally from organizations that have reached out through to lawmakers such as yourself and also to the Permanent Fund Dividend Division and to the Pick, Click, Give program who have hoped to be listed I would think that it wouldn't be more than a couple of dozen added to the list. They're mid-sized organizations who currently may have a budget between $250,000 and $500,000 a year. So there's a discrete number of those organizations. But because some of them may have self-selected not to apply, knowing the rules, we just won't know who all of them are. That being said, as an answer to your second question, how do we ensure that these organizations are reputable and not too numerous? Short answer is any organization who wants to participate in Pick, Click, Give still has to have an IRS letter designation that they're a 501c3 organization in good standing. They still have to submit the 990, and as the sponsor noted, it's an extensive form that requires reporting and transparency in lots of different categories. The organizations also have to have a voluntary board, a majority of whom are Alaska residents. So these are your neighbors and friends who we're talking about here, who are overseeing the charitable organizations that are on the list. They also have to have provided services in the state of Alaska for the previous 2 years at a minimum. And so these, these rules were put into place by direction of the legislature 7 years ago to ensure that the participating organizations were ones that we knew. They were not fly by night. They were not completely outside organizations and didn't have any responsibility to the people of the state of Alaska. And so because of those rules, there's also another eligibility criteria that you have to have $100,000 or more or 5% of your annual budget in individual contributions to qualify. And what that does is it ensures that the organizations that participate have an infrastructure that can accept and manage individual contributions. So with all of those criteria in place, we believe that organizations on the list are very likely to be the kind of organizations you'd like to be sure to support. That being said, the Pick, Click, Give program is not a police organization, and we don't have the infrastructure or, frankly, a desire to go into the books of all the participating organizations. And to your final question, Senator Wilkowski, through the chair, the number of organizations, again, the enhanced search feature on the permanent fund dividend online application itself has been improved year after year. And we believe that it's much less cumbersome than it was in the beginning. You might recall that in the first year, in order to avoid the possibility of certain organizations receiving more dollars than others because of their place in the alphabet, the organizations were randomly served up in a random order each time you queried, which was far more difficult to work with than some of the improvements that have been made to the search functionality of the program. So, to the extent that it's cumbersome, I can appreciate that. I personally have enjoyed going through the entire list and clicking as many of them as I possibly can.
Thank you. You said you didn't have a policing function. If somebody notifies you of apparent unethical conduct or and so on and so forth, what happens then?
I'm not the right person to answer the question. I don't know how that is managed at the department. I do know that its contractor receives the applications, makes sure that all the correct documentation is provided, often does follow up with organizations that don't have all the pieces of information to make sure that each application that has a good chance of
Yes, I can take that answer offline.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
What the corrective mechanism is when you get a suspicious report, somebody rats them out. All right, please continue.
Thank you. Today you have an opportunity to strengthen the program with several enhancements to statute that will help ensure that Pick, Click, Give stands on its own 2 feet. On behalf of the Pick, Click, Give partner organizations and all of the 500-plus participating organizations who have asked for an opportunity to help contribute in the most efficient way to the statewide coordination and outreach, on behalf of Pick, Click, Give, I respectfully request your favorable consideration of HB 75.
Yeah, thank you. forgive me if I repeat what our Senator Giesel has done. We have online also Chris Christensen, U of A, Candace Winkler, Anchorage Community Council, Mike Walsh, the 4-Acre Group, and who else?
He's here in the room.
Oh, I'm sorry. Chris is here. Yeah. And do any of the people on the list I just read want to speak to us? Or are there questions from the committee to any of those folks? All right. I
appreciate Hi, this is...
Go ahead. Go ahead, ma'am.
Hi, this is Candace Winkler with the Alaska Community Foundation. And I just wanted to say that I'm here available for questions if there were any in particular with regards to the number of organizations on the list or if there are further questions regarding the overall cost of the outreach program that we've been running.
Thank you. Are there questions for candidates? All right. Representative Seatman, would you come back up, please?
Thank you.
Stay.
Yep.
I appreciate all that's been done and what I think this bill does. Is there been any pushback, any critics?
No, Mr. Chairman. We have had questions for explanation, but we haven't had anybody that's opposed this program.
All right. Any further discussion or questions from the committee? Seeing none, Chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for House Bill Number 75, Finance, Version 28, LS0323/Oscar from this committee with attached indeterminate fiscal note and individual recommendations. As an aside, it's next committee of referral is Finance.
Objection? Seeing none, bill is passed. We'll take a brief at ease while we sign the documents. On the record, Representative Sadler, is it the old version you prefer?
Mr. Chairman, the C, Charlie version, it's the CS.
Charlie. All right, we have before us, it's the T version you want, right?
C for Charlie.
Charlie, all right.
This is not it.
I know that. All right, so before us, we have CS for House Bill 75, the / C version. I'm sorry, 32. Yeah, I'm sorry. All right. Yeah, I'm page half behind here. All right, so before us we have CS for House Joint Resolution 32, the / C version, as our working document, Representative Sadler.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning, and to you and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. For the record, this is Representative Dan Sadler, House District 12. We do have CS for HJR 32 version C before us, and I'll just observe a few comments and ask your questions. Alaskans do have a rich tradition of willingness to live and let live. We respect our mutual right to believe and behave as our conscience dictates and to tolerate those of other ethnic, cultural, and religious backgrounds. Many Alaskans also have a close connection to what we used to call the Holy Land, the countries of Egypt, Israel, Lebanon, and Syria. It's the birthplace of Christianity. It's where the Apostle Paul had his conversion on the road to Damascus in Syria. That's why many Alaskans care about this area, and that's the reason for this resolution. Certainly, Mideast upheaval is not new, and I can't blame anybody for not trying to track, who shot John in that region of the world. But constituents of mine at the St. John's Orthodox Church in Indigo River brought the situation to my attention out of concern for their fellow Orthodox Christians in Syria. The country has been in civil war since the Arab Spring of 2012, And it's, as things often do over there, become a nightmare with different Muslim sects, Al-Qaeda factions, jihadi groups, and Christians all fighting each other. It's a mess, and again, I couldn't explain it if I tried. But the take-home here, and what's important, is that in the middle of the Civil War, Christians and Christian churches seem to be the target of systematic attacks. Innocent women and children are being murdered, Christians are being kidnapped or forced to convert, Christian churches are being burned, desecrated, and destroyed. Almost a year ago now, two senior Christian clerics, Johanna Ibrahim and Boudous Yaziki, were kidnapped near Aleppo. And a couple months after that, an Orthodox nun, Mother Pelagia Sayef, and dozens of orphan children in her care were also kidnapped to the monastery of St. Tecla in Malou. Now, mercifully, Mother Sayef and the orphans were released in March, and that's the new version, the CS of HCR 32, reflects the recent and welcome news. But the bishops and others remain in captivity, and the destruction of churches in the cradle of Christianity does continue. Mr. Chairman, they say that all that's necessary for evil to triumph in the world is for good men to do nothing. And certainly we can't do an awful lot here from Alaska to fix the Middle East, but we can and should raise our collective voices against such crimes. This resolution simply calls on our nation to exercise our moral authority and our diplomatic influence in the region to seek an end to the civil war in Syria and the atrocities committed against people of faith and their houses of worship. I appreciate your attention, and we'll be glad to answer any questions I can.
Any questions or comments from the committee? Senator Wilkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Which religious group is being persecuted in Syria? Is it the Greek Orthodox, the Syrian Orthodox? Do you know?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski. Lord, I couldn't pick it apart. I mean, there might be a fair argument that everyone's being persecuted in the middle of the Civil War. There are about 700,000 Orthodox Christians in Syria, population about 22,000 in the country. About 700,000 different denominations of Orthodox, and maybe 400,000 Christians who you might consider in communion with the Roman Catholic Church. So about 1.1 million Christians, Syrian Christians in the country.
And Senator, to continue?
Do you know if the United States has adopted any sort of policy on granting those who are being persecuted asylum?
Through the chair, Senator Wilkowski, I do not.
Do you think it would be appropriate for us to urge the U.S. government to open up or grant those who are being prosecuted asylum if they're not already?
Through the chair, sir, that's a fair question. That's a generous question. I think I'm on the lines of it's better to try and solve a problem at home instead of trying to deal with it piecemeal as it comes to our shores. Certainly might be a way to go, but that's not what I was seeking to do. That expands the scope of the issue a good deal further.
Dyson, certainly in that entire region, what to do with refugees is a huge issue, and the bordering countries have large colonies or camps on all of them, and I wish we could solve this and that problem with a resolution.
If I may, sir, one calculation I did was that while the Christians in Syria are only about between 5 and 8% of the population, as you might calculate, they make up about 25% of the refugees that are involved there. So your question is well placed, sir.
Out of curiosity, do you have any sense of the number of Syrians who are in Alaska, or if we have any Syrian refugees here?
No, I'm afraid not.
I would suspect we all appreciate you bringing this forward, and there's lots of amendments we could add, and this late in the process, you know, that's a problematic issue of amending it, even though this amendment would approve it. You can say for the record that you appreciate the sentiment at this point. You know,
most assuredly, Mr. Chairman, I appreciate the sentiment to not make perfect the enemy of good.
All right. Further discussion, questions? For the record, I know from my own information that also Jews and Baha'i folks are not well treated there, but they're not near the numbers that Orthodox and non-Orthodox Christians are near. All right, Chair will entertain a motion.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move CS for House Joint Resolution Number 32, State Affairs, Version 28, LS1532/Charlie from this committee. With individual recommendations and attached zero fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, it's passed. I apologize both to the co-chair and folks here for my confusion about getting the right tab and the right bill number. Thank you for your patience. All right. Is there any other business come before us? What's what do we have on tap for the next meeting? All right. We have nothing scheduled for the next meeting. It will be at a call of the chair, and we are under the 24-hour rule. So, but I suspect there won't be a lot of things coming up. We're adjourned at 9:51. Thank you all.